how do I think about, how do I deeply respect, how do I connect with these animals and then kill them? I'm Kurt Iverson. I live here in Juneau. I've got a couple kids, a wife. I work for the federal government at the National Marine Fisheries Service. I grew up in Michigan, rural Michigan, and like a lot of people, I came here as a young person and stayed. I usually hunt alone. I almost always hunt alone, and I appreciate being alone. I really do. It's hard to describe the thrill I feel when I have my pack on my back, my rifle in my hands, and I'm walking up some valley that I've never been in before. And then if I see the track of a big buck deer and I know he's really close by, that charges it even more. And you hear a snap in the woods and you know he's coming. And that sense of anticipation is very high. And then he steps into view. And then there's the challenge of making a clean kill. Am I good enough to hold the rifle steady and put the bullet where it's supposed to go? And the skill that goes along with that, because you've been practicing it and working on it since you were a kid. And it happens. And that is a thrill and a charge too. Watching the animal go down in the scope. And then you walk up on the animal and it's dead. And that's the deflated moment. There is a moment there when I think any real hunter says, what have I done? I think you have to pause and reflect on what the seriousness of what you just did. You know, and in all sense of purposes, I didn't have to do that because I have a job in the federal building and I can buy all the food I want at the grocery store. Now, I just killed this animal. So that's not what it's about. I'm going to honor that process by taking that food home and treating it right. And it's very, very good food. It's the ultimate organic red meat from that deer I just shot. But do I really need to do it? No. But I'm going to do it, and I go to great pains to do it right, because that's important, and it's part of the honor of, I'm honoring that animal I just killed, maybe. Maybe that's too strong of a word, but maybe that's part of the process. Because you really do respect that animal, you know, and I think anybody who has a lifetime of hunting knows what I'm talking about.
Yadeklotak kakahani yuchat duasak, chakna ayachat, shangu kwedi ayachat, shukahadi yadi ayachat, kauli hit ayachat. My Tlingit names are Yadeklotak and Kahani. I'm an eagle from the Thunderbird clan and the house lord from the sun. And I am a child of the Tlukahadi or the Sockeye clan. In the other world, the English world, I'm Rosita Wuerl, and I serve as president of the Sealaska Heritage Institute. You know, in Tlingit culture, a child is given to grandparents, and I was one of those children. I called it our social security system, where we were trained by our grandparents, but then we would end up taking care of our grandparents. As it turned out, I guess it was my grandmother more than my grandfather, really didn't want me to associate with non-Native people. And so I didn't have to go to school. Everybody else was going to school. And I mean, this is age five, age six. And I used to have so much fun. But the unfortunate thing is it was at a time where the federal government and the missionaries wanted to assimilate and civilize and Christianize Native people. And I was taken away from my grandparents, and I was literally kidnapped to a mission school. those times, those years in the mission school, it's kind of a blur to me, but I know it wasn't a happy time, except for the time when my other grandparents were able to rent me from the mission school. The mission school would rent out children as laborers, and I remember going with them and being able to play. And there was a field of daisies up there, and I remember rolling around in those, you know, in that field of daisies. And so it wasn't a happy time. It took my mother, again, not my biological mother, but my mother in our Tlingit culture, it took her 3 years to get me out of that school. So that my whole life has been, adult life has been dedicated to working to ensure our cultural survival. And I started getting involved politically, and we took a very different route in settling our Aboriginal land claims. Our leaders really wanted to have control of our land and our resources. We had learned from the experiences of other Native American tribes that their lands are held in reservations and they're held in trust by the federal government. So our leaders did not want to do that. They said, we own the land and we want to control the land so that we could re-tribalize them, so that we could make them fit our native culture. And corporations became the vehicle for that. I was fortunate in that my mother trained me. And when I say trained me, she was a union organizer. So at age 10, 11 years old, I used to accompany her to take the minutes of her union meetings. She was organizing unions among salmon cannery workers. So, I feel fortunate in that I had that kind of training. I went to Harvard, yeah. And people think that it was my formal education, that made me what I am today. But I will tell you, I attribute that to my mother and the kind of training that I went through with her.
My name is Lionel Barwiden Yudipa. I am a local here in Juneau, Alaska, and I'm a chef. I feel like I grew up in the industry. My dad was a chef, and my mom has always worked in the front of the house as like a waitress at our family diner. And so I would get off of school, and I'd go straight to the restaurant, and my parents would have me just do random tasks around the kitchen, make French toast batter, wash some dishes, just to kind of keep me busy. There was a lot of hustle, there was a lot of moving around, and it was very well orchestrated, and it kind of just like sparked something in me that I really, really loved and just wanted to be a part of. And I didn't take it seriously until about 2006, when I decided to go to culinary school in a place called Le Cordon Bleu in Atlanta, Georgia. When I first moved back to Juneau about 6 years ago, I helped open up a restaurant called Salt, which is just around the corner. And I was there serving as an executive chef for about 5 years. And then just always told myself that I've always wanted to open up a restaurant in my hometown. And we are opening up a global street food eatery called Red Spruce in about a month.
You were speaking in a very humble way, I think, about your accomplishments as a chef. Let me just give you a chance to talk about some of the awards that you've earned, sort of how you've distinguished yourself at this point.
Yeah, the first real cool award that I won was the Great American Seafood Cook-Off, and that was held in New Orleans back in 2017. And I was looking at my sous chef at the time, Jacob, and we're like, we gotta win. Like, we have to figure this one out right now and see what we can bring to the table, because I feel like these other doors will open up, which they have. I did a cool show with National Geographic and Gordon Ramsay, and so it was really cool working with him and kind of just being on camera and seeing how much goes into 60 minutes of being on TV.
This is Southeast Alaska, America's final frontier.
The show is called Uncharted.
I'm on the southern Alaskan panhandle.
So we, the first time I met him was the first time we filmed, and that was up Eagle Crest. He drove in on a snowcat, and I was snowshoeing.
Welcome to Alaska.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
Lionel Yudipa,
is one of Alaska's top chefs.
Then I send him off to go to Huna to do some fishing and kind of like gain all this like experience of like the land and how cooking was established there and how they do things over there. And then he comes back to Juneau and we do a cook-off together based on what he learned.
Lionel makes a start on his first dish, a traditional seafood chowder.
How did the cook-off go down?
It went really well.
Gravlax with honey mustard sauce, smoked belly on pumpernickel toast.
Like, he cooked some really cool stuff, and I learned from him and the people that helped set it up.
Thanks for being out here.
Mate, you're welcome, honestly.
I know you're freezing your ass off.
I have frozen my ass off all week, man. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was super fun. And that was a huge career accomplishment.
God bless.
Thank you.
Chef, good to see you, man. Take care. I'm coming back, okay? Hopefully when the snow's gone.
My name's Iola Young, and I live in the Flats in Juneau, Alaska, on West 10th Avenue. I first came to Juneau in the late 80s to work at the legislature. About the time that I started working for the legislature, I met my husband, who was a commercial fisherman. A mutual friend gave us both each other's telephone numbers. He came up to my house in his old truck, and he had a fresh sockeye salmon in the back, and he pulled out his fillet knife and his piece of plywood and filleted it right there on the tailgate of his truck, and that was it. Such skills. That was it. Wait a minute, I've got a great picture of him here.
He was a handsome fella.
He was very handsome. When he got his diagnosis of small cell lung cancer, he said, "I would like to die at home in Iola's arms. I'd like to finish the adoption of our 43-year-old daughter." That adoption was in the works. "And I'd like to go back to Hawaii and roll around in the surf with the two grandkids." So he got two out of his three wishes. He died here at home in the bedroom with Naomi and I. Naomi is my biological daughter. She was in high school when Tom came into our lives. And their relationship, you know, being a high schooler, was kind of rocky in the beginning and things like that. But over time, it just grew so deep. She had said to him, "Would you like to adopt me? That could be my birthday present to you. I'll do all the paperwork for it." And as part of the process, they both had to write a statement about why it was important to them. And I thought at that time, how miraculous and rare it is that you know exactly why someone is important to you. Not only do you know it and say it, but you write that down. And so Naomi filed the papers and asked people to pull strings to get this to happen, and it happened. She was in the judge's chamber. Tom was on the telephone, and the judge signed the adoption papers, and Naomi was officially Tom's daughter. Later that day, she sent flowers, and the card on the flowers said, "It's a girl."
When you speak about your husband, I see tears in your eyes, but I see a big smile on your face. I mean, it's an interesting combination of emotions, I imagine.
It really, yeah, it is. It's, I just miss him so much.
Kayak yuchetuasak. Tlekach enach kua kyle dementor for all you chet to a sock. Lukacheri nechetsati, shangukedi yadi ayachet. My name is Kayak. or my English name is Kyle Dementiforl. I'm from the Sukakheti clan, and I'm child of the Shungukheti clan. And I work with the Juneau School District to ensure that our students in our schools, they receive education that is place-based and relevant to our Indigenous identity to this land. This is the Indigenous homeland for the Tlingit people who've been here at least 10,000 years. In our stories, we say since time immemorial. To go back in our history with European influence, it was a history of our languages, our culture, and our really entire Tlingit being was prohibited in many different ways, and our generations above me, they were punished for speaking their native language. Fast forward to today, maybe there's only 100 or so speakers of the Tlingit language out of a population of 10,000, but we're in a language revitalization movement, not just here in Juneau, but I think Indigenous people all across America are trying to pull back their language and bring it back to a healthy stage. I went to a small charter school, and I learned about American history, European history, but I didn't learn about the history of the land I was living on. And so it wasn't until really late in high school, actually it was when I joined a program, and the program was Native Youth Olympics, and that's what I'm here today doing, 12 years later as I'm coaching it. But 12 years ago, I was a high school student, and I decided to join this program. Someone reached out to me and told me there's this sport based on Indigenous games that were used by hunters to test skills of strength and agility and to help them be better hunters and live out on the land. So this is one of our early practices. We just started our season, and right now they're doing the one-foot high kick. So the one-foot is a form of sign language that was used long ago to communicate across the tundra of a successful hunt. And you could see someone do a high kick like this from the distance, and it was a good sign. It meant a successful hunt.
My name's Ezra. I'm 15. And I go to Thunder Mountain High School. I'm a sophomore. At first, I was kicking like a little, 6 feet for the 1 foot high kick. And then I kind of just stayed committed with the sport. And I actually kicked 7 feet, 6 inches or 90 inches in the 1 foot high kick and set a new PR from 72 to 90.
It's really such a privilege to be a coach and such a dream job for me to be able to do this. Because it impacted me so much as a young person.
Kyle is a big role model for me. My name is Matthew. I'm 17, and I'm a senior at Thunder Mountain High School. He helped connect me to my culture, which growing up, I never really got the chance to a whole lot. So I'm thankful for him for that.
I have a lot of passion for what I do, and that's because I can see the results with the young people that join NYO.
It's out of the blocks.
Juneau, Alaska.
One neighborhood.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story. Everybody's story.